Welcome back to the Leadership Loop. Today, I just finished a conversation with Dr. Toby Schwartz. He is the head cross-country and track coach at Whitworth University. He is an incredible coach. He has helped take those programs and make them some of the top programs in the nation. He's been coaching for 27 and 25 years in each of those. And we had a conversation today about how to help others win. As a leader, as a coach, in any aspect that you lead in, that you have influence in, you get to help others win. And so I'm really excited for you to hear this. But I also hope that you like and subscribe, that you would follow along, because we've got more guests coming who you do not want to miss. So here's my conversation with Toby. I hope you enjoy it. Toby, who was your favorite athlete that ever was under your coaching?
Michael Whitworth.
Oh, yes. I knew it.
He was on the team for about a week and a half. And
before I dropped out because I couldn't take it.
Yep, because he couldn't make it through the warm-ups. But that's okay, because his spirit was willing. But his body,
weak. Very weak.
Weak sauce. No.
I did, yes, for all of you who are right here, I did practice with Toby's track team for it was probably 2 weeks.
You're an athlete.
I'm just trying to humble brag. I am an athlete. Okay, speaking of athletes, you have coached thousands of athletes. What separates the best from the rest?
It's a great question, and that means I need to stall and think of an answer. Again, the easy answer to that is talent. I mean, talent kind of trumps everything, right? Yep. But there's kind of a common consensus out there about there's four types of athletes. There are highly talented athletes that are highly motivated. And motivation in this context, you can interchange effort. You can say passion.
Yeah.
Highly talented, highly motivated athletes. I mean, obviously those are the ones that we see on TV, the ones that are doing professional sports, all that. Then there are highly motivated, low talent.
Yeah.
Those are probably 90% of people that we see do sports, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, kids that are doing, I mean, they're maybe not super talented, but they're very motivated to get better.
Yeah.
And we need those people, and that's what most of my team is. And again, I'm not saying they have no talent. They just have lower talent than a high. Then there's high talent, low motivated. Those people just are a pain to coach.
Yeah.
Those people are kind of hard to be around. If anybody's been around someone that's got a lot of gifts, but they don't realize those gifts, those people are just hard.
Yeah.
And trying to motivate them is very, very difficult. And then there are the low talent, low motivated. And those people are people that – you just have to find a way to get them to go do something else. You know, go do something else that you're more passionate about, you're more motivated about, because you're just not gifted to do this. So with that being said, if you have that combination of high talent and high motivation, I mean, you're going to accomplish a lot. And that's whether that's in athletics, whether it's in music, whether it's in what business, whatever your kind of area is, you've got to have the talent. And then you've got to be motivated or have that passion or put in that effort to do that.
So as a coach, you are able to assess who's highly motivated, who's highly talented, who's not. And does that translate from athletics to leadership?
Yeah. Again, I think that crosses over to every realm is that, in my opinion, everybody has talents. And then we have things that we're just not very good at. Yeah. I mean, I'm not very good at a lot of things. But then I'm very motivated or passionate or want to be good at things. And so I realize my full potential in those areas. So again, as an athlete, if I'm talented and I want to be a really good athlete and I'm passionate about it and I put the effort into it, then I'm going to come closer to my full potential.
Yeah.
But then again, something like music, I'm not very talented, but I'm also not motivated to get better at it. Yeah. I can sing in the shower. I can sing at church with 1,000 people where they can't hear me. But I'm not going to go and practice it and try to be the best singer I can be.
Right.
And so when you're dealing with people, you have to, as a leader, figure out, okay, is this person talented? And if they're not, are they at least motivated to be better at what they're doing and bring something to the table? Or are they not talented and they're not motivated either? And so now you have to start having conversations of, you know, hey, is it better that you go do something else? And that's always hard in I think in our society. We don't want to tell people you're not good. We don't want to squelch people's dreams.
Right.
But sometimes we have to. So I've been coaching for 27 years at Whitworth University. And after 10 years, I had a huge program. But what I had was a program that I let anybody be a part of. And the problem with that was it was like a high school program in that I had really talented athletes, really motivated athletes, but I had really untalented athletes and not very motivated, but they loved being on the team. They wanted to be there. It was a place for them to go.
Yeah.
But I just saw that they weren't getting anything out of it. They weren't contributing to the team, but they also weren't getting anything out of it. And so I just remember the first person I called into my office and I said, "Hey, here's the deal. I think you need to go do something else." And this young lady just cried. And she's like, "But I love the team and I've been doing track my whole life." And I said, "But there's other things you can do." Well, 6 months later, I run into her on campus and she goes, "Toby, you know, good to see you." I said, "Yeah, what are you doing?" She goes, I'm working at my church. I'm doing the youth group." I go, "That's great." A year and a half later, I saw her and she was the youth director at her church.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I'm so glad I cut her from the team.
Yeah.
You know, because that's more valuable than her being out there putting in all these hours and being the slowest runner on a team.
So I love, here's what I'm picking up from you is, as you got to that point where you realized huge team, some of these people shouldn't be here because they're more talented somewhere else. So you're thinking about, how do I help this person win to their fullest potential at what they're great at what they're motivated in? And you are willing to have that hard conversation in order to help them win. And that story is a fantastic story of, if you hadn't said that, she maybe never would have experienced that success in her life. So I want to ask about, you had this big team. Now you have two of the top programs, cross country and track, in the nation. How do you create a winning culture? Because you can have all sorts of strategies, but culture eats strategy for breakfast. So how did you create a winning culture?
Yeah. Again, it goes back to having those tough conversations. But before that, you know, there's two types of kind of, organizations that you have, either as a leader. You come in to an organization and you inherit, right? You inherit everybody. That's tough because now you've got to create a culture, right? And oftentimes you are coming in because, you know, maybe the person who left, you know, wasn't doing a good job. So now how do I build a better culture? Or you come in and the culture was really good and the person who left, people are going, "Oh, we didn't want that person to leave." And now you're coming in that situation, right? And so when you come into an organization, you inherit it. That's one thing. And then the other thing is building something from scratch. Well, for me, I think it's a lot easier to build something from scratch. It's really hard to take something that you've inherited and make it better. So, again, those are two different things. So, one of the things that you have to do though, is you have to have a clear vision of what you want the culture to be. And now if the previous group of people are used to something, now you have to convey to them, "No, this is the new direction we're going to go," or "This is the direction we're going to continue to go, but this is the new way we're going to do it because I'm different than the previous person." Or you come in, you say, "Hey, you know what? We're starting from scratch. This is how we're going forward." And so again, communication, one, having a vision, but then being able to communicate that. And so going back to, you know, when I had the program that had, you know, 140 people on it, where that's just way too big, I had to just tell athletes, "Here's the deal. There's four types of athletes out there. I'm going to keep the high highs. I'm going to keep the high lows. The low highs, which are the, you know, the highly talented but low motivated, I'm sorry. You're just gonna have to go do something else with your life. And then those that are low, low, I'm gonna help you try to find something else to do with your time." And so again, those are those hard conversations, but oftentimes as leaders, we don't wanna have those hard conversations because we think, well, gosh, one, it's conflict, and most people are conflict avoiding. I'm conflict seeking. I mean, I tell people
such
all the
a good
time. Oh, I know, it's great. I am a conflict seeker because I found over time that anytime I've avoided conflict, it's caused more problems. It's just resulted in other baggage, other miscommunication, other whatever. But if I have conflict, and then, and this is the important part, if I choose to invest into that, it always works out. And what I mean by that is you have to go into it and say, "Hey, I'm going to ride this thing out as long as it takes to get to a place in this relationship, in this conversation, whatever, where we both leave going, okay, we're moving on." And sometimes that's moving on together. Sometimes that's moving on apart, but I don't see benefit of not having honest conversations or facing conflict. Now, I'm not creating conflict. Again, I'm not going out there and saying, but when there's conflict that exists, I'm going to lean into it.
All right. So Toby, you are, you lean into conflict. Mm-hmm. I am a person who leans out, and I imagine a lot of our listeners also feel the tendency to lean out of conflict. Help us. Can you give us like a strategy or a template that you use to lean into conflict? Because like you said, it helps when you do.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of different ways to answer that question, but I think the key components are, one is you have to trust. And again, this comes from a spiritual perspective, yeah, is that God's going to honor if I'm honest, right? If I'm going about this conversation with honesty, yeah, and then also with love, meaning, yeah, I'm having this conflict not to be, again, I'm right, you're wrong, but hey, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
Okay, let's have an honest conversation here,
yeah,
and then come to a resolution or a solution.
Yeah.
But what, unfortunately, why people avoid conflict is because what they're thinking is, well, I don't want to have this conflict because it then becomes this argument.
Right.
I don't have arguments with people.
Yeah.
I've chosen in my life to not have arguments. I have conversations. If I ever feel that a conversation is turning into an argument, I just stop and say, okay, you know, we're done, because there's no point in us trying to debate something.
Right.
So the other thing is, I start a conversation, you know, hey, you know, this is going to be a hard conversation that we're having. But I ask questions and try to get the person to talk as much as possible and, yeah, get as much out that they want to get out,
yeah,
about whatever the topic is.
Yeah.
Because what generally happens when we have conflict is we go, okay, I'm going to have this conflict conversation, and we're scared. And so we feel like we just need to talk and talk and talk and talk and talk,
yeah,
and control the narrative or the, yeah, conversation. And then the person just gets defensive. Mm. So the key is never put the person on defensive, yeah, by allowing them to basically control the conversation.
Yeah.
And then, again, have a conversation when they're saying things that, oh, I hear you. Oh yeah, that hurts. I understand, yeah, that. Now, from my perspective, this is what I hear,
yeah,
or this is what I understand, or this is what I think needs to be done. Now, what are your thoughts on that? And it goes back to what I said earlier, where you have to invest in it. So if I'm going to have a conflict conversation, it's not, okay, I've got 15 minutes to have this conversation.
Right.
It's like, all right, set aside 3 hours.
Yeah.
You know, and if this thing goes 3 hours and we got to have a bathroom break, you, yeah, know, halfway through, then that's what we got to do.
Yeah.
But basically going into the conversation, one, saying, okay, if I'm honest, then God's going to honor that. Two, yeah, is don't put the person on the defensive. Three is let them talk it out and get out as much as possible.
Yeah.
And then, you know, be a listener. And at the end, don't leave that conversation and say, okay, so this is what I'm hearing. This is where we're at.
Yeah.
Now, you know, this is how we're moving forward.
Hmm.
I had to, you know, I have to, you know, sometimes fire assistant coaches, you know, or not fire them as much as say, hey, it's, I think you should move on and go do something else. Don't, yeah, come back. I need to cut athletes from my team. Sometimes I have to have conversations with people that are doing things incorrectly. And in those, as long as I get them just talking and getting their words out, sometimes they come to the realization. And so I don't really have to say much.
Right.
One of my assistant coaches said, Toby, you have a gift for people to quit before you cut them. You know, like I bring them in the office and I say, okay, you know, I've got to cut this person from the team.
Right.
But again, by the time we're done with the conversation, they'll say, yeah, I just think I need to move on,
yeah,
with other stuff.
Yeah.
But part of that, it's not me like doing some Vulcan mind meld, right, on them. It's just getting, allowing them to talk. Because,
yeah,
what basically people do, and again, I think most people out there listening understand this, is the voice in our head is oftentimes the strongest voice,
yeah,
and it's oftentimes the wrong voice.
Mm.
We don't let other voices come in, okay, and especially voices that are contrary to what we are thinking, because,
yeah,
oftentimes we just put in voices that confirm what we believe.
Right.
So sometimes you need to allow yourself to hear conflicting voices,
yeah,
and then sometimes you just need to talk, and when you hear yourself talk, you go, oh, so my voice inside my head is saying this, but when I actually verbalize it, I'm going, oh gosh, that sounds really stupid.
Yeah.
Like, or that's like, I had a guy a number of years ago came to my office and was telling me how I never, yeah, after 4 years, I never listened to him and all this kind of stuff. And I said, hey, remember that time when you had that breakup with that girlfriend and we were walking around the back 40 of Whitworth for like 2 hours talking? He goes, oh yeah. And I go, remember that time? And I remember that time. And he goes, oh yeah. Like he just like blocked,
forgot it,
those, yeah, times out and held on to like a time where I was in a hurry or something,
right,
and didn't give him the time of day. And,
yeah,
and again, that's my bad, but also, okay, remember those other times? So, yeah, sometimes you got to let people talk.
Yeah. So what are, you talked about motivation a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What are three things like that you use, mm-hmm. whether it's skills mm-hmm. or whatever, that mm-hmm. you use to motivate people more?
Yeah. Money, fear, and no. So motivation, I think, is really misunderstood. Okay. Yeah. So the Latin root of the word motivation is movere. And sorry for my Latin teacher out there that's saying I'm mispronouncing it. But basically, it means to move.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, there's a lot of definitions and explanations of what motivation is. But I love that idea that motivation, the root of it is to move. So think about this. If I want to motivate someone, I basically want to move them from where they're at to where I want them to be.
Yeah.
So if I want to motivate someone to be a better athlete, I want to move them to be not a very good athlete to being a better athlete. Or they're lazy. I want to motivate them from being lazy to working harder. Yeah. Or for me, I want to motivate myself to get in better shape. I need to motivate myself to get out of bed, go work out, and get in better shape. Yeah. So it's that idea of moving people. So now the question is, how do you move people? Mm-hmm. Well, we move people because they value something. And so when it comes to what are the three things that, you know, are the best ways to motivate people, it all depends because everybody's different. What motivates me does not motivate you.
Yeah.
You know, in my life, I look back at like what has motivated me to accomplish certain things.
Yeah.
And one of the things is when someone's told me, Toby, you can't do that, and it's something I really valued, that puts a chip on my shoulder and I want to prove that person wrong.
Yeah.
So that's a very motivating thing. So at one point in my career, only one parent in all my years, 30 years of coaching that I ever look and go, oh, I wish I never met that person. Okay.
Yeah.
Like for 30 years, I've had awesome parents. The parents of my athletes have been amazing. One person that just, but this person said, if you continue to coach the way you do, you'll never have an All-American. An All-American is top eight in the nation.
Yeah.
Okay. And at the time I'd never had an All-American because I'd only been coaching for a few years.
Yeah.
Said, you can coach for 50 years. You'll never have an All-American. Well, coaching was important to me.
Yeah.
And so I really wanted to, you know, prove myself as a coach. 2 years later, not only did I have All-American, I had a national champion. And since that time, I've been blessed to have 12 national champions and over 100 All-Americans.
Wow.
So for you out there listening, no. The point is for me personally, that motivates me.
Yeah.
However, if I go to 99% of my athletes and say, hey, you know what, Michael, I don't think you can accomplish that. I don't think you can be very good at it.
Yeah.
Most of them will cower in a corner and rock back and forth until, you know, someone brings them something.
Yeah.
And so you have to find what motivates people. What do they value?
Yeah.
And, you know, I joked at the beginning, you know, money and fear, but those are the two biggest motivators in our society for the most part. I mean, fear motivates a lot of people to do certain things because they're scared of, you know, not accomplishing things or whatever.
Yeah.
And then obviously money is a positive motivator. Yeah. And so you really have to get to know people and find out what they value.
Yeah.
Whatever they value, that's going to motivate them.
Yeah. Have you discovered in your athletes some like, oh man, I've seen my athletes lately, they really value this.
Yeah. And so that's interesting because again, when you do something for a long period of time, you start seeing trends, but you also see changes, right?
Yeah.
When I first started coaching, people valued like success. They wanted to be good at things. Now it's not that people don't want to be good at things, but people want to be valued. Like, so what do they value? Being valued, being known, being, respected and heard.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's something, you know, you can read it in the research out there when it comes to, you know, all kinds of different areas, you know, that like high school kids right now, are in this, just time of fear, because whether it's the pandemic or whether it's, you know, shootings in schools and all this kind of stuff, they just fear. And so they want safety and they want to be known and feel like, they're valued. And so when I like recruit an athlete, right? Like I'm recruiting an athlete, I want them to come to Whitworth. I want them to be on our team and stuff, but I want them to come for the right reasons. But in the past I would say, hey, you know, we're really good. We're a program that's one of the best teams in the nation at times. And we're, you know, we have all these, you know, people that have had success.
Right.
They don't really want to hear that. They want to hear that they're going to be valued and they're going to be coached and they're going to be loved and they're going to be loved regardless whether they're good or not. And so those are the conversations I'm having with them is, you know, hey, you know, I want you here.
Yeah.
And so that then motivates them to make the decision to come.
Yeah.
And then when I have athletes on the team, if I just say, hey, come on, let's work hard and get better. Sometimes that's not what's going to move them to work hard. Sometimes it's like, hey, I believe in you. you know, I love you. I care mm-hmm. about you. And then that's enough for them to say, okay, I want to work harder because Toby loves me.
Yeah. That's so interesting that you've seen a shift from really like emphasizing mm-hmm. success as mm-hmm. what's most important to now emphasizing value or being known or being cared for as what's most important. And I can see that in like the area that I lead as well, that people want to be known, valued, loved. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do that, mm-hmm. then they will underperform. Mm-hmm. And that's not on them. That's it comes to you as the leader. Mm-hmm. You as the leader are in charge of helping them mm-hmm. win. Mm-hmm. And if you can't do that by valuing them, loving them, knowing them, then yeah, you're gonna see people underperforming to their capacity. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Here's what I want to know now is, have you ever, we've talked about you helping other people win. Have you ever squashed an athlete's potential or is someone leading under you? Maybe it's another coach. Mm-hmm. And what did you learn from that?
Yeah. I mean, a couple of thoughts go through my mind. I think back to before I was a coach, I worked at a, Krista Ministries has camps over on the west side okay. of the state, Island Lake and Miracle Ranch. And so Island Lake is a camp. A buddy of mine was the camp director. And so I worked there before I came to Whitworth, before I even got offered the job to be at Whitworth. Yeah. And the way the camp worked, it was 13 weeks during the summer. Kids came for 5 or 6 days. And like 180 to 200 kids, yeah. and there's 150 staff members. And so it's a big, long, you know, big camp, 13 weeks, different kids every week. But we'd have a staff meeting. And one staff meeting early on, a young lady stood up and she got very emotional. And she said, you know, one word can ruin a person's entire life. Hmm. And I was sitting there with a buddy of mine and we walked out afterwards. I'm like, that was a little dramatic. Like that's pretty sad if that's the case.
Yeah.
Because that was my mindset. If you let one word impact your entire life, yeah. then you got to find some things to work on. And, but since that time, I've been around a lot of people, a lot of different people. And I realize not everybody's like me. And, sometimes one word can. And so, I've come to realize both positive and negatively, like I had someone, a year ago, I had a recruit in my office and at the end of the recruiting visit, the dad said, "Hey, do you know so-and-so?" And I kind of remembered them. They said, "Man, they just can't say anything bad, but they said that you had a conversation with them one time that just changed their life." Mm. And I sat there embarrassed thinking, I can't even remember the person,
yeah.
let alone the conversation.
Yeah.
But it goes back to this idea that, you know, we can say things sometimes and we don't even know it. And it works out well for us and it works out negatively for us. Yeah. So the key is then is to make sure that we're very intentional about what we say and what we do, no matter who we're around or where we're around. So when you ask that question, my obvious answer is I'm sure. I'm sure I've just squashed people unintentionally. You know, I can't think of anybody that's come up to me, "Toby, you ruined my life." You know, I haven't had that, thankfully.
I was sad when you cut me from the track team.
Exactly. Yeah. Back when I told you, "Michael, I think you need to go on and be a pastor instead of doing track and field." It worked out for both of us.
It did. Yes.
No. But again, it's that idea that I think it's more what I've learned over time is that everyone's different.
Yeah.
Everyone matters. And again, going back to what we previously talked about, it's you have to know who you're working with and what they value.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, one of the things talking about trends and things that I've noticed is, you know, when I started working as a kid, I guess I had this idea that when you got paid to work, you were paid to do your best. Like that's why you got a job.
Yeah.
And maybe that was from my family or just the culture at the time or whatever. But that's how kind of everybody was. Like I didn't know anybody that just kind of went to work and kind of went through the motions and got a paycheck. Like everybody, you know, worked hard. Now, some people worked harder than others, but for the most part, people worked hard. What I've seen now, and this is just a kind of an observation, is that I see people look at work as being like they get paid to not do something they want to do. So for example, if there's a high school kid that's out there working at the Starbucks, it's not because they want to be a really good barista. It's like, well, I'm getting paid because I really want to play video games right now. Or I really want to do something else. And so then when you ask them to do like, "Hey, get better at this," they're kind of like, "Well, why? Like, pay me more if you want me to be better because you're paying me to be here. if you want me better. So it's this kind of incentive idea. And so then again, it gets back to that whole idea of motivation is some people are just internally motivated that I want to reach my full potential.
Yeah.
While other people, you have to get them to understand
yeah.
that doing more is really a value.
Yeah.
Because to them, just doing enough is a value.
Yeah. Is there any way, like whether it's for ourselves as leaders or for other people, is there any way to help people add fuel to their fire mm-hmm. of their own personal drive?
Mm-hmm.
Because as I look, I see the leaders who achieve the most are usually the most self-driven leaders. Mm-hmm. So have you discovered any way to like help people add fuel to the fire of their personal drive?
Yeah. So you know, basically we're talking passion, right?
Yeah.
Like people that have passion for things generally put in more effort.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's brings them self-motivation. You know, there's this idea in athletics that you're really not going to reach your full potential unless you're passionate about what you're doing.
Yeah.
Well, kind of Serena Williams kind of messed this up because she came out and said, I don't like tennis.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh, you're the best tennis player probably ever to play, yeah. male or female, and yet you don't like tennis. But what she's passionate about is clothing and, you know, her yeah. design stuff. And but she sees that being a really good tennis player helps with that. Mm. But she also understands that she has other things to offer by being a really good tennis player. Yeah. So I guess, you know, so that kind of replaces that passion. So I think one thing is we need to find what are we passionate about,
yeah.
but also we need to find that there are things worth being passionate about. Mm. And so that's where you get into the whole spiritual aspect of yeah. it. So there's a verse in the Bible, you know, in Corinthians, run in such a way to win. You know, all the runners yeah. run.
Yep.
You know, okay, I'm a track coach. I get it. Okay. It's the only verse I know. No, all the runners run in such a way to win.
Yeah.
Well, there's two important parts about that verse. One is it talks about run in such a way to win. Like it doesn't say run in such a way to get second, run yeah. in such a way to have fun, run in such a way to enjoy yourself. It's yeah. run in such a way to win.
Yeah.
But the important part is the in such a way.
Hmm.
What does it mean to be in such a way? Well, in such a way means to put in all your effort and not just go out there and just do it half-heartedly.
Yeah.
But there's another verse in the Bible, which is Matthew 5:48, which is be perfect as our Heavenly Father is perfect. The problem with that verse is people think be flawless, like don't make a mistake. Well, why would God tell, we're all screwed up. We yeah. all make mistakes all the time.
Yeah.
So it's not be flawless. That verse is actually translated, be complete as our Heavenly Father is complete. Mm. So again, it's that idea of reaching your full potential. It's James 1:2, you know, yeah. consider it pure joy when you face trials, blah, 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 because you'll become complete.
Yeah.
Again, God wants us to be complete. Mm. And so when I think about self-motivation, I think about, okay, like what does God want for me? He wants yeah. me to reach my full potential. Now, not everybody out there is a Christian, so I get that. But people talk about, well, I want to be my best.
Right.
Okay, well, if you want to be your best, then quit being so stinking lazy. You know, the one of the things that frustrates me, and I'll just be honest with you right here, yeah. is people use the word excellence all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, you hear in countless settings, excellence, excellence.
We've got a culture of excellence.
Yes, yeah. I hate that. Because you know what excellence is? Excellent. I'm excellent compared to you.
Hmm.
It's a comparative thing. So yeah. I'm excellent compared. Well, okay, well, I'm just going to find people that are worse than me and then I'll be excellent. I don't yeah. even have to do anything.
Yeah.
The hard part is just finding people that are worse than me. Okay, maybe that's easy. but saying, hey, I want to be perfect, yeah. not flawless, but be complete. Okay, now that's a better standard. Mm. Well, then that motivates me to want to accomplish more things.
Yeah.
So I guess that's my answer, long-winded answer to your question is yeah. you have to help people to understand that just going through life and doing things halfway
yeah.
is not what we're called to do. And if you say, well, I want to be my best or I want to accomplish things, okay, well, then that takes effort. It takes yeah. motivation. It takes sacrifice. It takes a lot of things other than just showing up.
Yeah. And so let me connect some dots here. I love what you said. People want to be valued. They want to be known. They mm-hmm. want to be loved.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're doing as you know them, as you love them, value them, you're seeing in them what they may not even see in themselves. Mm-hmm. And so if you can give them that gift of, I see this in you, mm-hmm. you are giving them a picture of, or a at least the next step of their progress, a win in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And that then gives them a, oh my goodness, like I see something that I could do that's worthwhile. Mm-hmm. I see who I could be that's inspiring to me. Mm-hmm. And if you can give that person that gift and then give them a few tools of here's how you could get there, which is exactly what you do as a coach. As a coach, you look at someone and you go, hey, I think that you can win this upcoming race. Mm-hmm. Here's the practice plan. Mm-hmm. I'm going to help you get there.
Yeah.
So I think if as leaders, if we can do that too, in the business environment, in the school education, wherever you are, if you can say, hey, I see this in you and I want to help you get there. Here's how. I think that, I mean, that's hopefully rephrased. Is that accurate to what you're saying?
Yeah. Again, that brings like 1,000 different things to the mind. But one of the things I tell my athletes when I first start coaching every year, as I say, there's two main roles I have as a coach.
Yeah.
One is to encourage you. One is to correct you.
Yeah.
Okay. Encouraging means to instill courage. That's what encourage means, instilling courage. So that means I want to bolster you and basically say, hey, you're really good at this. Keep it going. Give them that vision that you're talking about. Like, yeah. Look at what you can accomplish. Yeah. So when we encourage people, we're instilling courage. Encouragement's different than praise. Like, hey, Michael, great job. You know, people after, you know, a church say, hey, Michael, great job. It's like, okay, that's praise, but that doesn't help me. Hey, Michael, great job on your sermon. I love those 3 points. The one point that really spoke to me, I feel that's going to really impact my life. Yeah. I mean, that's encouraging to you as a speaker. Like, hey, I said something, God used me, and that's going to make me want to do it again.
Right.
It makes me want to get up and prepare my next sermon well. And okay, that's encouragement. But the other thing is correction. And that's what leaders don't do well, because we don't want to discourage. We think that if I correct someone, I'm going to discourage them. But what correction is it's not criticism. See, people talk about there's constructive criticism. No, there's just criticism. Okay. Constructive criticism only works if when someone is criticized, that motivates them or it ticks them off enough to get better. Most people don't function that way. Most people, when they get criticized, again, they shrivel up into a ball and don't do anything. Correction is, hey, this is what you're not doing well, and this is how you get better at it. Yeah. Okay. Again, it's difference between being a teacher and a teller. Yeah. If you're a leader, you got to be a teacher, not a teller. Don't just tell people what to do, teach them what to do. And so when you correct someone, you say, hey, this is what you're not good at. This is how you get better at it.
Yeah. I've heard someone say that you shouldn't bring a problem to a leader unless you're also bringing a solution with it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that similar?
Exactly. It's the same kind of deal. If I just sat there and said, hey, you're bad at this, you're bad at this, you're bad at this, all I'm doing is criticizing and complaining. Again, a food critic, what do? They say, this food is bad.
Yeah.
They don't say, this food is bad, this is how you make it better. Now, that would be a really good food critic, but that's not often. Or a movie critic. I hated this movie because of this and this, but here are the things that you could have done to make it better.
Yeah.
But again, when I'm doing that to an athlete, I tell them, I'm doing this because I love you and I feel that you can get better.
Mm.
If I didn't think you could get better, I wouldn't waste my time.
Hmm.
And that's the thing that we need to understand. It's the same thing God does, right? God corrects us all the time.
Yeah.
He encourages us all the time because he values us. He loves us. He knows that we can be better.
Yeah.
He doesn't say, hey, you know, Michael, Toby, you need to be better at this, you know, because, but you know, I really don't think you're going to, but I'm going to tell you anyway. No, it's like, hey, I see this is your potential.
Yeah.
You know, change these things so you can get there. But that's that difficult conversation. You have to sit down with the employee. You have to sit down with the person at work and say, hey, I love you. You're coming to work every day. I appreciate you showing up, but okay.
Yeah.
Now here's some things we need to do to get better.
Yeah.
And now how can I help you do that?
Yeah. So how do you, I mean, when you are dealing with athletes or other leaders, how do you help people deal with failure? Because that can often be demotivating for people when they fail. They want to give up instead of push forward. How do you help people?
Well, again, people need to understand, and this is every single human being needs to understand, that failure is not a result. It's part of the process.
Hmm.
And unfortunately in our society, we've been, you know, we've been just taught or programmed that failing is bad.
Yeah.
Okay. We don't seek failure. But we need to understand failure is part of the process of life. Again, consider it pure joy when you face trials. We learn from our mistakes. We learn from the hard things in life. We don't learn. Again, I've had very successful seasons.
Yeah.
At the end of those seasons, I have to work hard to say, okay, how do we get better next year?
Yeah.
Because it's easy to just sit at the mountaintop and go, man, this was awesome. We just crushed it. But man, when I've had seasons that have just been horrible, like, not this past season, but the season before was the worst season I've ever had in all my coaching. And here I am, you know, 26 years into coaching and I had the worst season ever. Well, I didn't expect that. Yeah. I thought it would always get better.
Yeah.
Well, big F in failure. Okay. Yeah. So now how do I get better? Well, that motivated me. Mm. Okay. It didn't tell me, okay, just go and, you know, go quit, go do something else, you know, go work for whoever, you know, I want to keep doing this job. How do I get better? I owe it to my athletes. I owe it to myself, et cetera. Yeah. So people need to understand failure happens more than success and failure needs to happen for us to reach our full potential.
Yeah.
And, but again, you can say that to people and still what happens? They fail and they find a hard time. And part of it is resilience is a skill. People don't understand that resilience is a skill. You're not born with it. Okay. It's not gifted to you. I can't, you know, really teach it to you as much as I can help you to build that skill. And resilience happens by, again, it's what perseverance is, right?
Yeah.
It's you have to go through stuff,
yep.
and then you have to learn how to cope with it and come out of it.
Yep.
And that's not something that's very, it's not done well in our society for this main reason, is we protect people from failure. And thus they don't have opportunities to cope.
Yeah.
And then they don't build the skill of resilience.
Yeah.
And so the best thing, you know, again, I got two daughters and they're out riding the bike and they fall down and they're bleeding in the driveway. I stand there and watch them, make sure they don't bleed to death, make sure a car doesn't come and run them over. But I stand there and it hurts, but I stand there and see, how are they going to deal with this? And they look at me, you know, daddy solved my problem. And I say, get up. Wipe yourself off, pick up your bike, bring it over here.
Yep.
You know, because that is then going to help them, hopefully, when they're 18 years old and they're one of my athletes and they fall down, that they don't look at me like I'm their parent.
Yeah.
And I need to solve it, all their problems.
Right.
And that's generally what happens, unfortunately.
Hmm. Wow. So failure is part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
It's growing. It grows our resilience. Can you just speak to this? This is, if someone, because I'm sure maybe right now someone is listening and they just hit the wall, they failed, maybe big. Mm-hmm. What do you tell someone when they want to give up?
God's got you. Hmm. Okay. I mean, that's always comes down to that for me, is that God will always be there for you.
Yeah.
But if you're someone that doesn't believe in God, there's usually someone else around that is willing to help you too.
Yeah.
And I think, unfortunately, what happens is when we fail, we think we're failures and we're losers and we're alone.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, so I have an athlete come into my office. Okay.
Yeah.
And they come into my office and they say, you know, my life is, you know, whatever, you know, and they explain to me what just happened in their life. You know, my parents just got a divorce, which happens a lot in college students, because parents hang on till their kids get out of the house, kids go to college, and then they just split up.
Yeah.
So a kid comes in, you know, my parents broke up and my dad's doing this, my mom's doing this and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just like, man, I'm sorry. That sucks. I mean, it's hard.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about how we can get through this.
Yeah.
3 hours later, kid comes to my office, you wouldn't believe, man, my parents just told me that they're breaking up. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? About 3 hours ago, one of your teammates just came in.
Yeah.
You know what? They're going through the exact same thing.
Yeah.
You know, and you're not alone.
Yes.
But we always think that we're the only one.
Yeah.
And I think that's, life is a team sport. It's not meant to be an individual sport. I coach cross country and track.
Yeah.
Those are notorious individual sports.
Yeah.
But one of the things I do in our program and why I think it's been successful is we've made it a team idea.
Yeah.
And I think going back to the whole organization thing and how do you get people to win and all this stuff that we're talking about, you have to create a culture where people are comfortable sharing their failures and understanding. And I try to be transparent with my athletes. Say, hey, you know what? It may look like that I got all my stuff together, but I failed, you know?
Yeah.
And the reason why I'm at this point is because I failed a lot, but then I've been able to get through it.
Yeah.
And you can too.
Yeah. That's so good. God's got you. Other people around you, they can help you.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the last thing you'd say to a leader who's listening? If you got one thing that you want to say, how do you help others win? What would you say?
You know, I think one of the things that I see a lot when it comes to people that are in leadership is they think, well, I need to lead by example. You know, I need to lead by example. I need to show that example. What I found over time is that's a little bit of a cop out. I'm not saying don't do that, but what you need to do is you need to lead by words.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have hard conversations. You have to communicate really well, over communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Again, one thing I kind of see in society is there's a lot of communication, but it's not good communication. It's not honest communication.
Yeah.
It's not sitting down with people and again, hearing them.
Yeah.
So communication, the again, going back to the Latin root, the root of the word communication is to make common.
Mm.
Unfortunately, we view communication as to convey my rightness.
Yeah.
So like if I'm communicating to you, I'm trying to make sure that you know that I'm right.
Yeah.
As opposed to, hey, let's make sure that when we talk, we're getting the same, we're getting a common idea across. Yeah. And so whenever I go into a conversation with someone as a leader, what I'm trying to do is make sure that we are making this common, this idea that we're having, as opposed to, hey, I'm right and you're wrong. Yeah. But the same thing when someone comes and communicates to me. And I think that's one of those ways that, okay, you can lead by example in that manner, but it takes words. Yeah. It's not just going out there and doing, you know, I'm picking up garbage and so everybody else is going to pick up garbage. Or I show up to work early and I leave late and so everybody else is going to show up. And that only works if people follow it.
Yeah.
You know, so I tell people, if you're going to lead by example, two things. What example are you leading to?
Yeah.
Okay. Like what's the goal? And then who's following your example?
Yeah.
Because oftentimes, well, I lead by example. I'm thinking, well, who's following you? Because I've got a bunch of athletes on my team doing all the right stuff, but they have no influence.
Yeah.
But then I have someone that does all the wrong stuff and they have huge influence.
Yeah.
And so you can't just, you know, lead by example. You have to lead with words, lead with communication and that kind of stuff.
That's so good. So I've heard so many things from you, but we've talked about motivation and really learning what people need, what they want, and how to help move them, because that's the root word. We've talked about culture. We've talked about communication. I mean, we could keep talking for hours, but I think there's so much here to chew on, and I want to thank you for coming and having this conversation. And I know that everyone who's listening as well wants to thank you, because we want to learn, we want to get better, we want to get feedback, we want to grow, because really leadership is helping others win, right? It's saying, I want to help you move from point A to point B. Let's do it as best as we can. And you've given us a lot to think about, Toby. So thank you, Toby.
Yeah, and thanks for having me, Michael.
Thank you for listening. And we will see you on the next one.